Are you a true motorsports enthusiast seeking premium safety equipment? Do you need expert advice to make the right choice? Look no further. Go to OGRacing.com. The ultimate destination for high-quality motorsports gear. OG stocks... It's not OG. OG stocks products from the largest manufacturers, including Sparco, OMP, Alpine Stars, and much more. OG Racing is offering... It's OG is offering an exclusive 15% to our listeners. Use code SLIPANGLE15 at OGRacing.com during checkout. It's OG, Emma. I think you'll get free standard shipping on orders over $100. Don't miss out. Visit OGRacing.com and use SLIPANGLE15 at checkout. That's OG Racing and OGRacing.com and SLIPANGLE15 at checkout.
It's called OG. Hey, Adam.
Hey, man.
It's been a long time since you and I recorded.
Probably been like pushing a month, right?
I think so. In that time, I have been to Italy, Mexico, San Antonio, Charlotte, Houston, I think.
I didn't know you went to Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you a story.
Oh, can't you? You went on a spring break. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us the story. I felt personally responsible for this, and I'm not sure why.
Well, I would say you are at least partially responsible because Gary had the same problem. And the problem, I think, is because we marked our calendars so early in the year. So let me tell you the story.
Last year.
Prior to PRI, I asked you for the calendar days for 2024 event season. Yep. You shared with me an internal document and you had indicated that the dates were locked. The reason I needed those days so far in advance is because Ashley has an obligation through her employers to work multiple weekends per quarter. I think it's, I think it's 6 days per quarter per company. So she has two companies. So that's 12 weekend days per quarter, which is kind of a lot. And so we try to balance our schedule so that she's off when I'm going to grid life. That way we don't have to find someone to keep an eye on Sloan while I'm away. You gave me those dates in November and PRI came in December. And conveniently, or at least in 2023, the CMP weekend matched up perfectly with Sloan's spring break week where her school is closed. It's like we basically have to do something because having childcare during that period is not an option. The school's closed. So last year it matched up perfectly. We went from spring break directly to CMP, or maybe it was the opposite. We went from CMP.
Yeah, you went the other way. I remember you going to Florida afterwards.
Yeah, so we went from CMP to Florida. Right. This year, when I got the dates from you, we looked at the calendar and it matched up so that spring break was on the front end and then CMP was immediately following. Mm-hmm. So Ashley booked a spring break trip in and out of Atlanta so that we could drive to Atlanta, fly to, in this case, Mexico, be on spring break for a week, and then we would return on Thursday to Atlanta to go straight to CMP. And so it's basically like a 7-day period where we're going to leave our home, go to Atlanta, fly away, come back, and then expect to be on the track. So on the Thursday that we were going to leave, on the Thursday, I called you and said I thought it was so kind of crazy to be packing for so many trips and have so much going on that I'm basically like packing two separate bags, but we're like, we just got back from Italy and now I'm packing more bags to go wherever, and it was logistically kind of complicated.
Yeah, you said something like, well, CMP's in a week. And I was like, what?
And you were like,
it isn't.
Weeks.
I mean, and in my defense, We've been talking all over social media about when CMP is.
So it's important for me to say that because I'm a GridLife admin on the Facebook, I don't see GridLife posts in my own feed. I don't see them ever. And sure. So add to that, we have an internal project management tool called Basecamp. And for some reason, I was not on the Basecamp associated with this event. So the only thing that I would have seen to confirm when the event dates were was our internal call sheet, have the dates on it. But
or our website or sure. a lot of things.
But I was not looking at those things because why would I? I already had the dates. I know that it's not just me in this case.
Were you at the State of the Grid at PRI?
No, I wasn't. I was working.
Okay. Yeah, you came the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. So
we also talked about dates at State of the Grid. And we talked about how
you're absolutely right. But the GridLife internal team did switch the dates, but there was no clear communication that date had changed, presumably because it was assumed that it wouldn't matter to anyone because that change would be affected in everybody's like travel plan. But like I had already had my travel plans. And the reason that I know it's not just me is because when I talked to Gary at CMP, which was of course 1 week later, he was like, no, the same thing happened to me. I had the dates and then it just so happened that I was free this weekend too. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah. I caught the Gary one like in December though.
Oh, well that's lucky. I should say though,
that it also happened with John. John Raymond, race controller John Raymond. He had it like pre-PRI, he had it booked like based off of that. And then like right before PRI, it switched because of some big car show and things. And I don't remember. So John couldn't come to CMP because he was already stuck going to Atlanta. I think he was at AMP last weekend. So
it should be stated that I drove in and out of Atlanta Airport from Louisville for what I thought was going to be convenience, but ended up being a completely unnecessary trip.
What else did you guys end up doing? Did you do anything cool in Atlanta?
Nothing. We came home. So we had considered the possibility of going to New Orleans for a few days because that's what we had done after CMP previously. But we had already been like traveling for, I don't know, like 20 days or I had been traveling for something like 20 days in the month of, in like the 30 day period, I guess. And I was like, let's just go home. So we spent the weekend at home and then
I'm glad you could make it to CMP.
Yeah, me too. Now Sloan and Ashley were expected to come with, but because of the miscue, they couldn't. They were occupied last weekend.
Well, we did get to see Austin. That was cool.
I was super excited to hang out with him a little bit. It felt like old GridLife, which was nice.
Yeah, and overall the event was sick. It was a great event, really.
I did not go to the music really at all except for the awards on Saturday. Right. And probably you can talk about it in more detail, but the audience probably knows that I am a risk-aware person. Yep. There was, on Saturday night, a party with, I don't know, 50 cars and 300 people, maybe, at the fueling station at the track. And people were like smoking cigarettes and cigars and whatever else next to the gas pumps. And I was like, I don't want to be here. I just don't want to be
leaning against the gas pump. And I think I saw one person smoking a cigarette, but quite a ways away.
Well, I saw two people smoking cigars next to the gas pumps. And I was like, I hope no one gets hurt. This is not for me.
It was the best hang. It was the best hang. I had a great time.
I'm sure you did, but I just couldn't do it.
Yep. So you went to bed early and then Austin and I came back and woke you up.
Yeah. And then we ended up talking about whatever for, I don't know,
at least 45 minutes or an hour.
Yeah. It was basically we did a show, but without recording it.
Yeah. We meant to do a show. And then we've talked about it before, but at these, especially these bigger events, because I was on site at CMP for like five and a half days. And like the whole time I'm like making decisions and answering questions and like running around like an idiot. And like at the end of the day, I just don't really have it in me to talk, even though like that's all you're doing anyway. But like it just felt like one extra step to bust out the mics and talk. And sometimes we just don't do them.
The missed opportunity for us was on Friday. There was a media on track rollers type time. And on Friday, that would have been chill enough to do some recording during that period. But by Saturday, Saturday is too crazy to try and do it during that period.
Yeah. We had said we'll try to do it then. And then I forgot that that's when like we were doing awards on the main stage, running around like collecting people and making sure the results were correct. And then all of a sudden it was dark.
Yep. Basically. So
anyway, good event overall though. I like operating at that track. It's starting to feel like home away from home. So,
well, it's probably not a coincidence because the track was designed by the same person and there were a lot of elements of the track that are really nice and convenient. The one complaint that I have from the tower side is that their customer Wi-Fi for network connectivity is not sufficient for us to do our jobs.
Right. And with Verizon on my phone, I only had like middle to low 4G the entire time. Everything worked enough, like using the text message system that we use and stuff. A lot of it we had to tie into the live streams. I think they were cellular bonding or live stream in and out.
So, the track provided Wi-Fi for like tower service and doing whatever would run sporadically at like 2 megabits per second. And so I had a more reliable connection that was faster by just doing a hotspot on my AT&T phone. But there's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 people in the tower that at any one point need to come in and like do some calculations or whatever.
Yeah. Or send something out to download something. Cell things are that was my biggest complaint there. I'm really encouraging them to put belting around the tires so the tires don't just explode when I drive with them.
Yeah.
If they belted and bolted those tires, I think we probably would have had an extra 40 minutes or an hour of track time because cars would have glanced off of them. It would have been a lot, you know, they would have done their job better, but versus have to go out and they literally tie the tires together with rope.
Solid.
It's so old school.
Maybe this is a good opportunity for you and I to talk about what I had proposed with the timing team. So a challenge for any one of our events, especially the biggest ones, is building a run group at the front of the weekend that takes into consideration driver experience and speed and all of these different factors to try and stack a run order in a way that's sorted fastest to slowest.
A best get in the driver's meeting. I refer to it as like our best guess to where there's minimized passing and stuff versus like a free for all.
And it's
the only time we do free for all is like if it's bucket raining for the first session, then it's just like, all right, well, whoever wants to go out, we'll just leave open track for an hour.
Man, I yearn for those days. They're so fun. Yeah. But
it's so much more relaxed when it rains.
The challenge of especially the festival weekends is trying to build a grid order when you don't already have one. And the drivers that you have on your entry list, only some of them are familiar. Right. So
when you only know 50 drivers out of 110, it's tough.
Yeah. And so it ends up just kind of getting sorted by class or whatever. And it feels sloppy because it's so subjective. And, it doesn't do a good job to ensure that people get clean track time early on in the weekend. And so what I had proposed to you and have already, Ryan has already made substantial progress on is a way to mathematically build a grid order on the basis of previous finishes and a bunch of other factors. And in this case, the other factors I think are the fun parts to talk about. So
it's effectively like a driver rating system.
Yeah. So we're creating a driver rating on the basis of like how clean you are as a driver, how high you tend to finish in the car that you, in which you're competing. And we're also now fully keeping track of your on and off track infractions that yep. maybe influence, you know, your overall rating, let's say.
And it's even things like, didn't check in with timing and scoring, arrived late and didn't respond, or like was rude.
Yeah. So,
I love the was rude to timing and scoring. I love that.
And Emma doesn't forget. So she has a list. But no, I think it's a good thing because historically we have thought of track battle as this entry to like toe in the water sort of competition. And we were reluctant, or I've been reluctant, to apply the same standards of behavior that we have now entrenched in GLTC. But yet, if you take a step back and you think about what these drivers are, they are expected to be veteran, advanced level drivers yep. who now venture into competition. And so having a similar standard for behavior and preparedness and courtesy, like, doesn't feel unreasonable to me.
No, not at all. Especially courtesy to the staff. Like if you're rushed and you're late, and you're rude to my people because of that, like I should know, and that should reflect in your driver rating. Yeah. Realistically, it definitely should.
And so during the weekend,
that's more of a thing than I actually thought of. Like,
yeah,
people being rushed, late, and rude is like, yeah, stop it, cut that out.
So and because of this, it won't just be our like our perception or our recollection of things that happened. Anytime now something happens, it just gets recorded and logged, right? Like it factors in.
Right.
And so
how would it take into consideration, I don't know if you thought about this, but people that drive in two completely different classes, like say Sunday Cup and Unlimited.
Ryan has thought of that, or we have thought about it. And so I believe you have an entry per class that you run. So your name might appear a few places, but your behaviors will apply to both, right? So if you bring a fast car where you tend to finish at the front of the field, and you have a slow car where based on raw times, you finish near the back, there's a speed factor basically and a behavior factor. And the speed factor will largely determine what seed or position you are in the grid order. But you and I can probably talk about the other factors of a driver rating that, you know, maybe if your rating is too low, you get put on probation or something. Or if it doesn't track up, maybe the organization says, hey, this is maybe not the right place for you. Why would you, why don't you consider competing in another series, for example?
Sure.
Ryan Dunham is an engineer and a spreadsheet wizard, and is currently Emma's like secondary on timing and scoring. And I kind of gave him this as a concept, and I said, let's just kind of spitball and work our way through it. There's nothing set in stone yet, but let's build something, and we can kind of tweak it based on what we think is most appropriate. And yesterday he gave me a 2023 driver speed score for all of the Sunday Cup drivers, which was pretty neat.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah. The speed score I think is analogous to, and he's like a rally nut. He's been on the show before, but the speed score is analogous to I think it's called a driver seed or something like that for rally. Yeah. And so, drivers in stage rally get to start in order on the basis of their like speed score, or I don't know what it's called. Let's see.
And for the audience, you kind of pitched this, like, wouldn't it be cool if idea to me on Thursday? And I was like, that would be cool. And then like by Friday night, you're like, Ryan's got it like half done.
Yeah. So, in Rally, it's called Speed Factor, and there's a website that does all these calculations, but it's not meant to entirely be behind the curtain. My objective is just like with GLTC, where the infractions and penalties are public information. I would like the driver ratings and speed factors to be public information.
I think as soon as you started talking about it in this lane, like where it's like a driver rating, like I was instantly intrigued, because like my daydream is for all the drivers to never want to fuck around, because they want their driver rating to stay high while also going fast.
Right.
So they're going to keep it at 10 tenths and not 12 tenths.
Right.
And whatever we got to do to make that actually happen, like that only makes the competition and the event and everything better. So yeah, give it, dangle a carrot in front of the drivers.
So, we haven't published it, but we have now, and I think we should probably use it before the next event, list of infractions for time attack. There also exists a list of infractions for GLTC. They're very similar, but, it includes all kinds of stuff like failure to register or, pass under yellow or miss checker or miss black flag or there's a whole bunch of things. And what I asked Ryan to do in part was to assign a numerical value for each infraction based on the severity of that infraction. And so when, in the incident log, Emma records, so-and-so driver passed under yellow. Well, there's a point value associated with that now. And all of those things can, be reflected on the safety side of the driver rating, which to me actually feels really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. Like I'm actually like really excited about it.
So small things like, I don't know, I'll pull up the list, but, Ryan had like, there are minor infractions that don't hit your rating very hard at all, but there are like seriously big ones that might, affect your rating a lot. Like, at fault contact with another driver on track. Like, yeah, that needs to affect your safety rating considerably, right?
Very much, yeah.
So, and even things as silly as like, oh, slow warm-up lap causing traffic for all the cars behind you. Like we, over the years, we know people that are guilty of doing that, but now to put it in an incident log and to assign points on a driver rating now, like, oh, well, there's an incentive to not drive that way.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
So I'm actually pretty excited about it.
Yeah. It's going to be sick. This is, it's like a thing we needed. We needed this. And I wouldn't have thought of like a driver rating system. It's perfect. It's exactly what we need.
It ties with the concept of the drivers being licensed, that you and Chris have proposed at PRI and elsewhere. If the license then had a rating associated with it, it stands to reason that you could lose your license by doing XYZ.
Yeah. You get too low of a rating, you're up for review.
Yep. So
exactly.
And the same would be true for probations or whatever else. But, I'm excited about that. We've just been working on that in the background and it seems to already be making progress.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's going to make my life a little easier. I'm going to have reason to yell at someone versus just like, hey, you need to stop doing these things. We're worried about you. Like your driver ratings, pretty low. And here's why. Here's how you need to improve. You have to improve these.
Right. So, at CMP, I won't name names, but there are some drivers who have what is now quite the reputation for losing control of their vehicle and driving four wheels off track. It happens a lot for some people. And if this were now very clearly captured in a driver log to say, oh, actually, in the last, I don't know, five events, you've driven off track 12 times, get it together. Here's how it's affecting your rating. Okay, well, now we have some real data to go with what is historically just our memory and recollection.
Right. The thing that I'm curious is like, okay, say we're looking at 20 weekends over 3 years for somebody or whatever, 4 years. and say they really derfed it up and sucked at the beginning of it. But then we didn't have any calls about them. They were nice. They went fast. They did great for 3 years. With whatever's being designed, do they earn points back, or they still got that bad first year rating?
So I expect, it's not done yet, but I would expect that that either the ratings will average out over time, or perhaps we're only looking at the last 2 or 3 years worth of data or something.
Right, right. Yeah, it kind of seems like if somebody has a clean weekend, we have no calls about them. If they get nothing negative, I think then they should automatically get something positive just sure. to bring things up.
Sure, so, sure. Yeah. And so what this also does is we consistently get drivers who are new to the series. If mm-hmm. This gives us a useful metric to like decide whether or not to license them in right. the TA way, because TA has so many more drivers, it's more difficult to manage like credentialing process than yeah. GLTC yeah. does, because GLTC just has fewer drivers on a calendar year. GLTC probably has,
it's in the 200s versus
20%, 20% the drivers 11. of the yeah. track battlefield. And so
yeah, it's like 200 versus 1200 or something.
Yeah. It's a lot. And so in this way, if you have a driver now that's new, it should be understood that they're probationary, and we create an entry for them on the driver rating. And if nothing is reported negative about them, and they're in good standing, and they not even their finish position, but if they're just in good standing at the end of the weekend with no complaints or calls or whatever, oh, well, mm-hmm. now we have all that data, and now they have a rating.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing how it evolves.
Me too.
It's going to be great. Going to be great. I love making steps like this.
Sure. And the cool thing is I didn't build it, which means that there's at least two people that will understand how the tool works and how to make entries in it. So mm-hmm. that's pretty great.
Yeah, that's great. I love it.
What else?
I don't think we've talked since CODA. So I had some bus trouble on the way back from CODA, nothing bad, but there were moments where my bus wouldn't go over like 40 miles an hour. And then I would pull over, and then I'd get back on the highway, and it would like rip again for an hour. It was fine. Right. So kind of established that the fuel lift pump that brings it up into the high pressure fuel system was going bad. And it was sucking air, which is, it turns out it was. Changed that. It was kind of a bitch to change just because of how it's mounted to things and stuff, but that's fine. That's fixed. Didn't have any of that problem on the way to CODA and back, or to CMP and back. I towed the dyno down with the bus. But I did lose approximately 4 quarts of oil all over the back of the bus in the front of the dyno on the way to and from CMP, which was terrible. Because it was dripping out one drip at a time. That drip would get sucked into the wind behind the bus and get like turned into a fine, dirty mist all over the back of the bus, which is 12 feet high and a lane wide. And then all over the front of the dyno, which is a lot of pieces of steel that people have to walk around. So I spent like half an hour cleaning the dyno when I got there. And then when I got home Sunday or Monday night, I put an entire bottle of Simple Green all over the front of the dyno, the back of the bus, and then let it sit for a while, scrubbed it, with a junky brush, and then pressure washed it with hot water. And now we're all clean again. So now I got to figure out what the heck is leaking. I think it's the crank seal, but yeah, when it went. So
good grief.
What a freaking mess. So that's next. I got to work on my bus, but hopefully, I'm going to take apart a bunch of stuff next week, hopefully find out the problem, have time to order the part before rev up. That's the plan right now, is freaking fix that stupid bus. I can't deal with an oil leak like that. I can deal with a little bit of drip here and there, but I can't deal with a constant drip that makes a complete and utter mess of the back of the RV.
Right. Well, so
the only other long trip I have is Lime. So I'm not really doing a ton of long trips. Lime Rock and then Mid-Ohio are the only other long ones I'm planning.
Yeah, Mid-Ohio is not even that far from you. What is it, five?
No, that's five and a half, 6 hours.
Got it.
But like, if every one of those trips, I have to go through a bottle of Simple Green, clean the back of the bus, and hate my life.
Yeah, for sure. Something that you and I talked about at the event that is maybe worth discussion is the logistics now of the events, given that we have events now all over the country, quite literally as far as California and as far as Connecticut. Us being centrally based in Chicago is pretty convenient, but it does mean that the physical equipment of the series is all over the place.
Right now it's all in the trailer.
Okay.
But yeah, for this one specifically, the trailer's not going to Willow in 2 weeks. Semi-trailer. So, last year it worked out nice because we sent it to Willow. It stayed in California for 3 weeks, and then we had Laguna, and it worked out pretty well. But so this one, we're the current plan, unless I hear otherwise, is I'm meeting a driver. The driver is going to be paid to transport all of our stuff out there that we need for this event. I pulled all the motorsports things. We're having vinyl produced in California is the current working plan. But we got about 10 days to figure it out. But yeah, right now that's the plan. I don't have a plan for Thunder Hill yet. Unfortunately, I don't have a plan for Laguna, for the dyno yet, which is my one big piece I want to bring to Laguna
for sure.
Obviously the semi truck is going to Laguna, but the semi trailer, we hire out loads. Basically we own the trailer, but somebody hauls the trailer.
Got it.
I gotta figure out some logistics plans for some of those faraway ones, but now the plan for Willow is that it will be in a van going out to Willow, so.
And hopefully charged. A nuisance feature of the transponders, which seems to be like the transponders that basically everyone uses, is they are on like the lowest current draw trickle charge. The transponders themselves, I'm sure many people have seen them. They're about the size of a deck of cards, but we own now 130 ish. Units?
Four cases times 32, whatever that is.
34.
34, whatever that is. Yeah.
What is that? 132? Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Anyway, the charger is like a specialty plug. It's not like a USB or anything like that, but it's a specialty plug that plugs into the suitcase that holds all of them. And it takes, I don't know, 17 hours to charge up the suitcase. And what it means is like, oh, well, if they're in transit for a while, they just need to be either plugged in while they're in transit, or they need to get there super early and plug in. And you can't really daisy chain any of them or anything like that. So you have four power supplies in four suitcases, and each of them takes 17 hours to charge a suitcase.
And they actually didn't send me a power supply with the last one. You just reminded me I have to email them. They owe me a power supply.
Yeah, there you go. So
it's the same cord as the decoder, though. So we actually have four chargers.
Oh, do we?
I was charging all four when the decoder wasn't plugged in on Thursday.
But the managing the logistics of those things, I think, is especially challenging because they are an essential component to running an event. So
I texted Owen at like 7 a.m. I said, as soon as you get to the warehouse, charge those things for the next couple of days. I need them to be charged because they hibernate when you unplug them if they're charged. And they seem to hold a pretty halfway decent charge for about a month. It seems like they start to lose charge after a month a little bit. They had been plugged in for half an hour at CMP. And I took one off, or Emma took one off, and it had a 2 day charge. And that was previously all charged. So I think that we didn't have any battery issues at CMP, and they weren't charged that long. So they held the charge from Coda.
But people who ran Last Dash on Sunday were all receiving low battery alarms on the system. But it ended up being fine. I don't think anyone missed any times. But regarding the hardware itself, we have the decoders, we have the computers, we have the transponders, we have their power supplies, et cetera, et cetera. you can run an event without door cards and banners and a whole bunch of things. You cannot run an event without that hardware. And so there's like a chain of custody sort of dilemma where, which is like, okay, how do we make sure that we never, ever run the risk of losing this hardware? Because losing it would cost money. Of course, that would be a problem. But like,
but the event is
if we
jeopardy.
Could not execute the event without it, that makes it really urgent.
Yeah. My biggest stress ever was the one time we shipped everything.
I believe that.
Like it's a giant stress. Like, for one, it's a big cost. Like you said, we shipped 3 cases of transponders across the country, right? On a pallet. But it's also like if a pallet goes missing, I can't run the event. Like it's impossible to do it.
So, I once shipped an analytical, like a chemistry instrument via a parcel carrier. I won't name names because I don't know whose fault it was, but it was a $200,000 suitcase, essentially.
Oh my gosh.
And I shipped it the way that the vendor told me to, basically put a label on it and shipped it out with the vendor. And it was over Christmas time. And that $200,000 piece of specialty equipment that there's probably 20 people in the country who would even have a use for it. That piece of equipment went missing.
Oh, geez.
Gone forever. And I don't know where it went. I don't know if it was stolen. I don't know if it was lost or damaged or what it was. But like this thing just disappeared. So it's not outside the realm of possibility that like the thing that you really, really, really need to get to that place, it just doesn't make it.
Yeah. That's where like I'm of the mindset where like, say the driver that wants to go out to California, I won't say who it is, a regular driver of ours, running a touring cup, say he changes his mind and isn't going. My backup plan is to just throw everything in my Honda Fit and drive to California.
It's not a great plan.
It's not a great plan, but I know the event can happen.
Sure.
So, or literally to rent a brand new car.
Sure.
And drive out to California.
So like, and in this case, having spares doesn't even save you because there's like the actual movement of the physical things from place to place that has to be considered.
Yeah. And I can't have a spare $85,000 timing system because then the company doesn't exist.
Right. There's just no company that has that much cash.
It's so much money in crap.
So,
and yeah, there are rental items. Obviously you need them to run the event. You rent the transponders to people. They eventually pay for themselves. Sure. But like, it's a huge chunk of money floating around. Same thing with the dyno, like the dyno to replace it right now. We didn't pay this much, but to replace it would cost me like $80,000.
Speaking of like, at Coda, you were talking about hub dynos for a while. What did you learn about hub dynos?
That they're very expensive and they take a long time to load.
Oh, sure.
Load cars on.
Which would be difficult for us.
It'd be nice to be able to just throw them in the enclosed in the semi trailer. Sure.
Sure. But it's also probably a requirement that wherever you are doing, if you were going to put a hub dyno somewhere, it would almost essentially have to be flat. And it is not always the case that the parking lot where the dyno is parked is flat.
Or the garage or whatever. It'd be nice because they'd be more compact and changeable and move around. But I believe they need big power. Some brands I know need water sources for cooling.
Sure. Yeah.
Like there's other pieces involved in it. The nice part about our dyno, it's a DynoJet T48 on a trailer, is like you can actually run that thing off of one 110 volt outlet. Like one regular, like if you can run a coffee maker, you can run the dyno.
Which is awesome, right? The only thing it really needs is it has an air compressor, and so it uses air power to power the air brake, and that's really all it is. Other than that, it's a couple of simple USB-powered sensors.
Yeah, you can run it without the fans even. The fans take the most power, but you can obviously do a couple pulls without fans. But the fans are inflatable tube man fans, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got a couple of fans, and I just swapped to a Harbor Freight like ultra-quiet compressor, which is great. Versus my old Makita compressor, which was not great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It used to have 12 volt compressors on board. and they took forever. If it rained, like you had to like take the lids off them, get the sand out of them, like they got hot. So I just ended up going to a regular pancake compressor, effectively, or a carpenter compressor. So
I wonder, you might simplify things a lot and maybe even speed it up, if we could tee off the outlet of that compressor to use it to inflate the tires to the target pressure. Like if I just had a chuck for inflating tires and a hose for that would make things a lot faster, because those portable air pumps, they do work, but it's just like another piece of equipment that you need. And it's a thing that takes time.
Yeah. I can come up with what you're talking about is for GLTC, for impound dynos, technically cars need to be at 35 PSI
right.
per the rules.
Yep.
I can easily make a splitter and then a separate air filler.
That would, and then if we had 50 feet of hose or whatever, that would be awesome.
Right.
And then we just inflate the tires and we're done.
I actually want to get a couple of new hoses, because the hose that I have is a nice hose, but it's way long. I really need two 20 foot hoses instead of one 50 foot hose.
Yeah, sure.
I should buy a couple of hoses and make a attachment before Midwest Fest. That'd be nice.
Sure.
And then just have we could literally do it. A three-way splitter, it fills the air tank on the trailer, and then it has a tire filler on either side of the dyno.
That would be awesome. I haven't paid attention. Are we doing, we are doing GLTC at Willow. Is that right?
Yeah.
How is the field looking for that? So back when we had,
I want to say it's around 20 cars. Right.
Back when we had tickets through C-Tickets, I was an admin and I could see everything. And now I might be able to, but they're buried somewhere in Torque Hub, so I don't really know. So I ask you.
And I ask Emma or Kyle.
Gotcha.
I'm not good at C-Tickets. I'm not nearly good enough to figure it out via my phone.
Gotcha.
I actually have an alarm set for tomorrow at noon or 3, looks like, for Emma to pull data. So.
Well, something that is relevant for the GLTC competition is we now have a lot more potential GLTC races on the calendar. I'm excited that it's not festival only anymore, because I think it gives us some additional grassroots competition capability. A benefit of all of these events being possible for accumulating points is people can now be quite strategic about where they go in order to secure enough points to see themselves nicely in the championship at pit race,
which is kind of what somebody's doing for Big Willow.
So yeah.
This driver who I'm sending things with, most likely he is currently taking his car apart to make sure that to fix the head gasket. So that's a problem. But,
yeah.
I think it's the best 14 races of the year for each driver. Plus the finale at pit race, where all races count, is the season points for the year.
So I'll be interested to see if this actually works out. But given that it's best 14 and given the number of events that we're running, it is theoretically possible that multiple drivers have 14 wins.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the thought, is I don't want it to be possible for somebody to have locked up the championship by August.
Right. But because of that, so is it best 14 and then they go to pit, or how does it work? Explain it.
So what it says here is the regular season champion will be determined by a driver's best 14 races of the regular season, along with the full points of pit race finals event. So where if there was a four-way tie going into pit race, to whoever does the best at pit wins overall.
Got it.
And then points from the best individual races will accrue for championship points. Tiebreakers will be first tiebreaker bonus points of qualifying races, because we award 3, 2, and 1 for P1, 2, and 3 points for qualifying. And best finishing position at Midwest Festival as the second tiebreaker. So obviously you can't have a tie all the way into Midwest Festival. I did finishing position at Midwest versus points at Midwest, because you can tie for points in an individual event.
Sure.
But you can't tie for finishing position. So
Gotcha. Yeah. It's a really like exciting year.
I'm excited by the season points races, the season point for GLTC. I'm excited that like, I think this is going to be kind of the final way we do it. And obviously we have some races scheduled at Thunder Hill in November. That's going to be the first round of 2025, but will also be the last round of our upcomingly announced FCP Euro West Coast Championship. So that FCP Euro is going to sign on as, or has signed on as the presenter for the, I think they're calling it the Pacific Championship.
Okay, cool.
But for Time Attack, that will be Laguna, Willow in a couple of weeks, and the Thunder Hill round. For GLTC, it started with COTA, it'll be Willow, it'll be Laguna, and it will be Thunder Hill. So
neat.
Yeah, so it's four rounds for GLTC, three rounds for Time Attack.
I think that'll be really neat.
And then all those will count for national points, but obviously like Midwest Festival won't count for the Pacific Championship. It's just because they're 2,000 miles away. We thought, well, a lot of those drivers aren't going to make it, but if we want to keep building Time Attack, we want to keep building GLTC, we got to make it mean something to some of these drivers where if they win, you know, the Grid Life Pacific Championship, maybe they can get sponsors, maybe they, things like that. Like, all of our championship drivers everywhere else, and you know, our national championship drivers, like almost all of them are like successfully like selling to sponsors, helping their programs out. They're, you know, it means something to people when they win a championship with Grid Life now, which is wild, but
it is wild.
Yeah. It's weird to think, but
back when I won, cool. No one cared.
Well, you cared.
I mean, I did. And you probably mentioned it more than I do, which is too many times.
Well, I think we almost did a podcast. I have to go back to work.
All right. Well, I'm going to be stuck in spreadsheet land from now until forever. So
we should do more of, since you work from home a little bit more now, and I work solo, we should do more of these. I don't want to keep talking because I'm going to step out into rain and wind. So it's going to screw up my earbuds, but. Well,
I can say that during the lunch hour, it is pretty easy for me to record, and it's probably much easier for me to record during the lunch hour than it is at like 10 PM at night, because I'm tired. And,
same, so, especially lately. You like yesterday you were like, do you want to record a show tonight? And I felt yesterday, like I felt physically fine, but you know, I drove like 14 hours the day before or something, 13 hours. Actually I drove 3 hours and then like 11 hours. I slept somewhere in North Carolina, or South Carolina. I forget. I drove about 3 hours from the track, but like I woke up yesterday feeling like I felt like a tired child meme, you know, that like meme of the like little kid being dragged around as they're crying by the merry-go-round or something.
Uh-huh.
Like that's the meme I felt like mentally. there was nothing going on in my head. I was mentally stupid. So yeah, that's why I didn't want to record yesterday. It would not have been good. Not that this is any good, but.
So the one thing I want to plug before we finish the show is I now have, many, many t-shirts, both track tuned and slip angle shirts. They are the ultra premium first edition versions or equivalents, that I had made a few years back. I saw several of them in the paddock this weekend. They're for sale. We don't make much money on them, but they're very nice. And if you could support the show by buying a shirt, go to tracktune.com. We'd really appreciate it. Or if you sign up for a Patreon and you sign up for like a 1-year commitment, I'll just mail you a shirt. So if you do either of those things, I'll get a notification. Or if you sign up for a Patreon, just ping me and say, hey, I want a shirt, and I'll just ship it to you. So
obviously we're not the best people at putting out Patreon shows, but we're good at making t-shirts and giving them to you. And we really appreciate the support.
So we appreciate everybody. And shout out to the two guys that bought shirts in the last week. I hope you really enjoy them, and I love seeing them in the paddock.
We see a lot of them in the paddock. I met a bunch of listeners last weekend, which was sick. I love it when somebody comes up and they're like, hey, I've been emailing. I'm the guy who's emailing you. I had like four people who I've emailed with randomly or like Facebook messaged with because they like got a question or a comment about the show. And I think it's so cool to meet them in real life. So It's freaking rad.
Well, we appreciate you all listening. Thanks for supporting us in 2024. If we can get into a routine now that all of the work things have changed, hopefully we put out some more shows this year, and we love talking, and we appreciate you guys listening.
Yep. Awesome. I appreciate your time during lunch, Abe.
Yep. See you, man.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabay, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough, and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes, and come and find us in the pits at a grid live to say hello.